in a local election, that is the most important way to actually get a victory.
I'm MK Anderson, and this is First 100 Days. A podcast where we discuss the idea that if the first 100 days of a presidency are so important, they're likely to be important for anybody else's career and life moves. We'll talk to CEOs, first-time parents, startup bros, and more to discover if the first 100 days are really that important. Today's episode will focus on local politics and their elections. We're chatting with Chris Connolly, former campaign manager for Kathy Tuttle, who ran for city council in Seattle the summer of 2019. Chris has a background in policy research and environmental advocacy, and I'm excited to chat with him today about his first 100 days managing a local campaign. Well, hey, Chris, how's it going? Thanks so much for chatting with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, MK.
Well, how's Seattle? If for everyone who knows, it's March of 2020, and it seems like Seattle is on the brink of breakdown. So how is it?
Yeah.
How is it out there?
It's pretty crazy. The coronavirus has basically like shut down the city. There's, you know, a lot of the office buildings downtown are completely shut down for the month of March, and you can just tell that the streets are more empty. It's kind of weird.
My favorite is people are buying hand sanitizer, but they won't buy soap. Like, there's a bunch of soap still available, and you're like, folks, the soap does the same thing. Why aren't we just, but, you know.
Yeah, it's probably better too, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't, like, it doesn't kill your hands, because what then, well, I guess the lotion industry is probably like, yes, this is what we have been waiting for.
Dry skin everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw a tweet that was like, just so everyone knows, it's also recommended to wash your hands not during a pandemic virus, so let's be sure we're doing that. But on that note, how about you give us a little bit of background into how you got started into politics, especially local politics, and especially since you come from a background of environmental advocacy. I know that that can translate itself into just the workings of politics, but at the same time, lots of people have their one issue and they just want to stick with working with that.
Yeah, and I mean, environmental issues is actually what got me into politics originally. It's always been a fascination of mine. And, you know, obviously, climate change is a huge issue in our nation and across the world. So in college, I took this class that looked at a bunch of different environmental issues and then actually dove into the solutions behind those issues. And I think after I took that class, I kind of realized, hey, we have all of the solutions to climate change and to pollution and all these other issues that are affecting us. So why aren't they happening? Why aren't we putting these solutions into effect? And that's kind of when I realized that politics was the answer and that we just need to build a political will. So that's when I, you know, started doing a lot more environmental advocacy and realized that politics is the way to make that change.
And what does that mean to be doing environmental advocacy? Because for some, that's, you know, joining a march on the street. For others, I'm sure that's going to their Capitol and talking with people and being part of a lobby group. But what did that look like for you?
Yeah, I think the beginning level was exactly what you said. You know, I joined the environmental group on Notre Dame's campus, and you know, it can be as basic as having conversations with your friends about these kinds of issues. That's where it all begins, is relationship building and having these tough conversations. But then I ended up working for an environmental nonprofit right out of college, and did a lot of what you would call, you know, political organizing, where I would go into these communities and meet with legislators, meet with community groups and other organizers, build a coalition, and then actually try to pass some kind of environmental policy in that community. So I did that for about 9 months with them and actually passed one of the strongest clean electricity bills in the nation in Washington state. So that was pretty exciting.
What is that bill?
It was 100% clean electricity. So basically all the electricity that is going to be produced in Washington state will be non-fossil fuel produced.
Awesome. And does that take the same route, I guess, as it would for a federal bill?
Yeah.
Like it goes through the House and the Senate and then ultimately signed?
Exactly. Yeah. They're crafted in committees just like in federal legislation. And then it has to, you know, there's two versions, a House version and a Senate version. You pass one of them, goes to the governor's desk, and he signs it.
So with your time in this advocacy work, did you notice your shift into wanting to be more involved in elections, or was election work kind of thrust upon you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the election of Donald Trump, so many people are getting more involved in politics, and I was definitely one of those people. And so with the 2020 general election coming up, I really wanted to, you know, maximize my impact and try to get the best president that we can into office. So I actually thought about joining one of those 2020 presidential campaigns, you know, did a lot of Googling, actually applied for a couple of organizing jobs, but ended up realizing that I didn't want to move from Seattle. I didn't want to go to the cornfields of Iowa to organize.
What? You didn't want to go to Iowa? Who doesn't want to go to Iowa?
Yeah, you know.
Sorry if anyone here is listening from Iowa. Continue.
Tramping around in a snowstorm in January doesn't sound like too much fun.
Nope, not at all.
So then, you know, I actually got connected to a former politician in Washington State and just hopped on the phone with her and was like, chatting with her about what I wanted for my future and what I was interested in. And she was like, well, I know this political consultant who's actually hiring a bunch of campaign managers. Would you be interested in talking to him? So yeah, hopped on the phone with him and he offered me the position to be a campaign manager for a Seattle City Council candidate. And so I was like, you know, this is perfect. If I do want to end up working on a 2020 presidential campaign, this is the way to find out if I actually do.
So what does it look like to really get involved, to make those connections, to ultimately be given an opportunity to manage a campaign? Like, what did that actually look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people get jaded about politics and politicians, and they think that, you know, these people are corrupt human beings and horrible people or whatever your view of politics is. At the end of the day, politicians are just humans, and I think that was one of the biggest takeaways I had from lobbying. Is, you know, they're just humans like everyone else, and they're trying to do that the best that they can, and they genuinely care about other people and about these issues. So, you know, I just hopped on the phone with this former politician, and she was super kind and wanted to help me out, and, you know, took 30 minutes out of her day to chat with me about it. And I think that that's true of pretty much anyone that works in politics.
So then is it a lot of networking back and forth with just trying to find the right opportunity and the right person, or is it pretty systematic and like they have a job posting and then you put in your application and your resume?
No,
you
know? I would definitely say it's a lot of networking and connections. I mean, everyone in the political world knows each other, so it's definitely helpful having those contacts that are willing to put in a good word for you.
And so then what do you think was most important when it came to ultimately getting the job? I mean, what about your background do you think set you apart from everybody else to be given the position of campaign manager?
I think a lot of it was my background in organizing with the environmental nonprofit. I had a lot of those skills, communication skills, and, you know, I had been out canvassing door to door before, which was huge. I trained volunteers, you know, I'd done all these skills that could directly transfer over to a political campaign. And also, I perfectly aligned with the candidate. The candidate was entirely environmentally focused. And obviously, like I said, that's my biggest issue and concern as well. So it kind of just jived from the beginning.
And for people who don't know, do you mind telling us what a political consultant is? Because I think that's a new word that folks might not even know exists. I mean, there's consultants for everything. But I mean, what does it mean to be a political consultant? And what did that phone call with them look like?
Yeah, basically a political consultant, at least for our campaign, was kind of like the head honcho. We called him the overlord of the campaign because he has the most experience. Likely they've been in politics for decades and they look at polling and they know a lot about messaging and communications. And, you know, you need to put down this much money for these ads. You need to hire this amount of staff. They just know the fine details of how to run a campaign. So he basically structured everything, and then we were the underlings that actually implemented that kind of structure.
So then what did your preparation look like before becoming, you know, before signing on to the job? Like, yes, I'm Chris Connolly and I am campaign manager.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy, honestly. So they had started the campaign in March. I didn't join until May. Okay. They had a campaign manager for a while, but ended up opting for me instead, and I basically had to hit the ground running because they were already what, 2 months into the campaign at that point.
And when was the election?
August 6th.
Okay, just so we have kind of a time frame of what it looks like.
Yeah, so it was hectic. I had to, that first week was basically absorbing all of our policy stances and actually going out and talking to some voters and hearing what they had done in the past 2 months and basically what we needed to do going forward.
And were you given any outline? I know you said that you had the political consultant who was kind of the overhead there, but when you showed up the first day, did they give you a strategy? Did they give you an outline of what you needed to accomplish? Or did you have to come up with that on your own?
They had some ideas, but to be honest, that was the biggest like whoa moment is I did feel like they weren't as prepared as they should have been at that point, and I think that that's why they were looking for a campaign manager and were excited to have me on the team, because there were a lot of holes in the strategy. They had an overarching message that they ran with, and they knew that they needed to knock on thousands of doors, but beyond that, there wasn't a defined, strategy. There wasn't a defined plan much.
So then you show up, then what? Like what were the things that you decided, okay, this needs to take precedence and this needs to take precedence, and how did you go about implementing those?
Yeah, the number one thing was door knocking. We knew that we had to talk to at least 17,000 people,
Oh my God.
in order to have a chance in the election. And for clarification, there's 20,000 people in the sorry, there's 100,000 people in the district,
Okay.
and we thought that about 20,000 people would be that was basically the magic number to win the primary. It was 20,000.
Actually, just give us some background on this election in particular. How many people were running, and what really does it mean to be city council?
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy election cycle. So basically, Seattle has 9 city council seats. 2 of those seats go to representatives that represent the entire city. The other 7 seats are broken up into districts of 100,000 people. So they're different geographic districts, basically. So we were in the northeastern part of Seattle. And yes, yeah, so we were District 4, and there were 10 candidates running in that district. So that was
Dang.
insane. Yeah, it was a huge field. And this was the primary. So the top 2 vote getters move on to the general.
And what is it that city council does? What are the sorts of things that they are in charge of making, is the word legislation? Like, what are they in charge of making legislation for?
Yeah, they basically write policy and build legislation for every aspect of the city. So they work with the mayor a lot of times. The mayor is kind of the executive branch. So think of like the president. And then the city council is like Congress, where they actually craft the legislation.
So this is your plug now to remind people that local politics is actually super important and probably directly affects you more than maybe federal elections, question mark. Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, and it's the place where you can have the most impact. You show up to a city council, a city council meeting, and you can make your voice heard immediately. Whereas you're not going to, drive to DC and go lobby a member of Congress, or you can. I encourage you to, but it's a lot easier to get involved in local politics, and you can actually build relationships within the city.
So what were some of the stances that she was taking? What is an example of what would actually be shifted should she be elected or others be elected? Like, what were the hot topics that were coming up?
So as I'm sure some people know, Seattle has this massive issue of homelessness. So we would hear about homelessness at pretty much every single door that we knocked on. That's all people wanted to talk about. There, because there's something like, I don't want to put a figure on it, but there are tens of thousands of people living on the streets in Seattle. And it's a very, so obviously that's a very visual issue that people deal with every day. So that was the main one that we heard about. We also heard a lot about housing density. There's a lot of battles going on in Seattle, especially in our district, where the city wanted to, build these larger apartment complexes, but the homeowners in that neighborhood didn't want these massive skyscrapers going up. So there was a lot of, feuds going on about that. And then the third biggest one was probably transportation. Traffic is horrible in Seattle. We're a hugely growing city, so everything, all this stuff is coming from that growth. So people wanted better public transportation, and they wanted better, less traffic, I guess.
And these, I mean, folks, these are things that even in Chicago and other cities that you know, you think about daily versus, and this is not to belittle federal legislation at all whatsoever, but, you know, those aren't the things that are affecting your daily life. Whereas people, man, I live in such an interesting part of Chicago, and people are so fussy about the buildings and where complexes will be and parking structures and all that jazz. And so the city council, or just depending on where you live, like your local person, those are the people that are dealing with those issues. So I think that's really good to point out, because it's, those are kind of the daily things that people complain about. Let's just put it that way. Like, people complain about these things, and if you don't know where to turn, it's to your local person. It's not to, sometimes it's not even to your state person. Like, that's probably not where you would go. Back to day one on the job, you know, what were your number one, two, and three things that you decided, okay, I'm managing this now, I'm strategizing this, this is what we're going to do?
Yeah, so number one was doorbelling. We knew that we needed to knock on thousands and thousands of doors. So my number one priority was building a volunteer team that could knock on thousands and thousands of doors. They had a couple of volunteers here and there that would help sporadically, but my main goal was to build out a team of something like 20, 30, 40 volunteers that would regularly knock on doors for Kathy. So that was number one. Number two were events. We hosted a lot of, you know, house parties and larger events. And that was just another way to get her message out there in a more intimate way, where she would, you know, go to someone's house and that person would invite 20 of their neighbors over and they could ask her questions and get to know her a little more closely. Also an opportunity to raise money for the campaign as well. And then number three was policy. When I joined the campaign, she had a website, but there wasn't a whole lot of policy up on the website. So we wanted to make sure that her policy stances were very clear and easy to read and were right there on the website for everyone.
And to give people an understanding, how much money goes into funding these local campaigns? Because we only think of it, I mean, God, Twitter's like, Joe Biden raised $20 million last night. Like, that is, I'm sure that's not the money you're working with.
Yeah, so there's kind of like, there's two pools. The first one is the money that the campaign can like actually use. And Seattle's actually very unique because our campaigns are publicly funded. I believe we're the only city that, yeah, I think we're the only city in the nation that does this, but we have these things called democracy vouchers. And each voucher is worth $25. Every voter in the city gets four of those vouchers mailed to them, and then they can decide where each one of those $25, which campaign it goes to. So if a candidate comes and knocks on your door, they can ask you for those democracy vouchers, and you can say, actually, I don't like you that much. I'm going to save my vouchers for someone else. So that added a whole new dynamic to our fundraising and to our strategy and to just the campaigns overall.
Are counterfeit vouchers a thing?
God, no, I don't think so. Okay. I hope not.
Here's the market, like, folks.
Right, you have to like sign the vouchers and then they get sent into the city and then the city actually gives you those public funds, the campaign, those public funds. So there's a whole process that goes through it.
So how much of your time was spent strategizing getting money? Like, what was your day-to-day brain doing, you know? Like, were you spending most of your time on volunteering, most of your time on getting the money, or most of your time on policy stuff?
We honestly weren't that concerned about money. We knew how much money we needed, and we wanted to like run some ads at the tail end of the campaign, so that was the largest chunk of money, as well as my salary. Mm-hmm. But we were a pretty slim operation, all things considered, so we weren't super concerned about money. The biggest thing was getting out and talking to voters, because that is like in a local election, that is the most important way to actually get a victory, especially in a field of 10 candidates. You have to go out and talk to voters and make a connection with them and get their vote, actually earn their vote.
So then what does that look like? You said you've had background in organizing volunteers for that, but what does that mean? And is it really just people in the matching shirts with clipboards knocking on doors?
Clipboards are crucial. So basically I was always recruiting volunteers at every single event I would go to, at every single door I knocked on. I was in the back of my head, I was always thinking about, okay, how can I get this person to volunteer their time for the campaign? Because that was the biggest thing that we needed. So once someone offered to volunteer, I tried to sit down and have a coffee with them and, you know, get to know them a little bit more, learn about their interests. And then I would pitch them on some kind of volunteer opportunity, whether it was policy research, whether it was data input, or whether it was door knocking. And then we would hold weekly, at least weekly canvases. On the weekends, I would meet the volunteers at a park and give them a quick rundown of how to canvas, give them a quick rundown of Kathy's policy stances. And then I would give them each, you know, a section of the city nearby where they would go knock on, you know, 50 doors for the afternoon. And they would head out and talk to as many voters as they could. And then we would meet back up in the park and have some snacks.
So I like that you get snacks as a reward. How many hours a day were you working? Like, what did that look like then? Because this doesn't seem like a 9-to-5 at all.
No, definitely not a 9-to-5. I was working, I never did the math, but it was probably an average of 75 hours a week. I worked 7 days a week, most weeks, and most of those days were at least 10 hours, sometimes more like 12 or 13.
And do you think that's crucial to making sure that this stuff gets done? Or do you think that there is some sort of balance that can be had when it comes to elections?
I think that it completely depends on the candidate and the team. We were pretty unique, like I said, because I was the only paid staff person. So I was basically in charge of everything. Everything fell on my shoulders, which was a big responsibility for me. And I kind of embraced it and went all out. But that's why, like, having passion in the candidate or the campaign or whatever you're working on mm-hmm. is crucial in this kind of job, because you are going to be working extra hours for not as much pay.
Okay. Because you had come in later than everybody else, do you think that those months really did a number on your effect for the campaign? Or do you think that that's something that could have been turned around when you joined?
No, I think it was probably the biggest downfall of the campaign. Time is the one non-renewable resource in politics. You can always raise more money, you can always recruit more volunteers, but you can't go back in time. So I think the fact that the candidate entered the race so late, again, she joined in March, there are already like 4 or 5 candidates in the race at that point. Mm-hmm. That really put her at a disadvantage. And then also basically having the campaign be her and her daughter for those 2 months also put them at a huge disadvantage. I basically had three and a half months, which isn't a whole lot of time on right. a campaign.
So then what was the ultimate result? I mean, do you think you saw a shift when you joined?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of my favorite moments of the campaign was after my first day. We had, you know, planned out a couple of things and you know, talked about what they had done in the campaign so far. And her daughter, like, looked at me and was like, "You have already done so much for this campaign. Thank you so much." And that, like, that was one of my favorite moments.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and that was just after 24 hours. So I think that the structure that I brought and the organization that I brought and the strategic thinking was a huge benefit to the campaign. Who knows if more people ended up voting for her because of that, mm-hmm. but I like to think so. I think she did decently well in the results, but I guess there's no way to really know.
Yeah, that's true. It's not like they take polls really for, I mean, do they do polls for local elections? How do those elections work?
Yeah, polling is like super expensive, so it's just not worth it for local elections to do polls.
That is not something I knew. And I mean, also anyone who cares, I care way too much about voting in elections. That was what my like, quote-unquote concentration was, I guess. And everything we learned about polls and voting in elections just went out the door with that 2016 election anyway. So, yeah, so I guess it is, like, you know, who knows about polls? So then otherwise, would you say that it's important to make a good first impression when it comes to campaign management or to have those set goals? Or do you think that's something that having that overarching team or consultant is really what's necessary?
I think it's a little bit of both. One of the coolest things about our campaign was that there was, you know, the candidate, her daughter, and I were basically running the entire thing. And we worked so collaboratively and worked as a team on pretty much everything. And I think that that's, like, super important, especially in, like, larger campaigns where you're working with hundreds of people. I think having that teamwork and camaraderie is really important to get through the tough days. But also, you know, everyone needs to bring their own skills to the table. And I think that my skills were very varied from the candidate and her daughter, which was definitely an advantage.
But like moving forward after the election, you know, what do you think were the most important things you learned and you think are pivotal towards local elections? Like if you could tell someone, all right, these are the things you need to keep in mind when managing a local campaign, what would those be?
Oof, that's a tough one.
Sorry, I didn't put that in the prep questions.
I think that bringing a real vision to the campaign is really important. Especially like we had 10 candidates in our field, so it was hard to break out and for voters to know which candidate stood for what. So I think just having, you know, knowing what your vision is and repeating that message over and over and over and over again and to as many voters as you can is the most critical thing, because you have to repeat these messages millions of times in order for it to break through. So just having a clear vision and then just repeating what that is over and over.
Which that's pretty parallel to modern marketing anyway, because they say that people need to see you at least 6 to 10 times before you stick in someone's brain and, you know, you're someone that they want to invest their money in, be that buying their product or voting or like even volunteering, right? Like, because that's, like you said, right. Time is a non-renewable resource. So is there anything else that we didn't touch on about managing a local campaign that you think is important to know, or even just something that you're like, people really need to know this when it comes to local campaigns and how they function?
So basically, like in the last month and a half of the campaign, give or take, we realized that we weren't going to hit our goal of knocking on 20,000 doors. Mm-hmm. So we actually ended up hiring 6 canvassers. So that like basically took over my life for the last month and a half of the campaign. I did everything from recruiting the canvassers to actually like sitting down and interviewing them to hiring them, and then went through a training process that daily I would train them for like over an hour every day on the skills needed to be a canvasser. So that was just like a hectic part that was also very pivotal, because with those 6 canvassers, we ended up actually knocking on 17,000 doors. And that was kind of like the tipping point of the campaign where we basically just, you know, and exponentially got better and better and started reaching thousands and thousands of more people.
And did you create a handbook for how to go about being a canvasser and all that jazz, or like, what do those structures look like?
Yeah, luck. Fortunately for me, I had a background in canvassing. I ran a canvassing office on an environmental issue with a nonprofit that I worked for. So I had a lot of the experience and the skill set, and I knew what needed to get done. So basically, I took those skills, tweaked them a little bit, watched some, you know, some YouTube videos and read some political canvassing guides and stuff, and then created my own guide on how to canvass, you know, frequently asked questions that you'll hear at the door. Policy stances, stuff like that.
Wow, who knew that all this, I mean, that makes sense that it's so systematic, because you can't just have people doing whatever they want when you're trying to get consistent messaging out there. So
exactly.
Makes sense. Thank you so much, Chris, for chatting with us today. Is there any, you know, final political plugs that you want to plug? Are you working on any other campaigns? What are the things that you care about? And anyone else who still needs to vote in the primaries or any sort of election, make sure that you vote in your local elections.
Yeah. First of all, vote for everything. Vote down the ballot. Local elections matter. Obviously, the presidential nomination matters. Also, this whole conversation, if you follow politics at all, you'll hear the term electability. I hate that whole conversation. I think it's silly. No one knows who is electable until, you know, the election actually happens. So vote for the candidates that you believe in and that you like their policy stances. That's all that matters in the end. And finally, if you're a young person, you know, do some research on climate change. And I hope that you'll realize that it's the biggest threat to our future, to having a sustainable future and for us to, you know, have the same prosperous future that our parents had. So vote like that actually matters, and make sure you choose candidates that understand that threat.
Awesome. Well, yay. That was a really great way to end this. If anyone is looking for a local campaign manager or a high profile campaign manager, I highly recommend my friend Chris. I don't live in Seattle, but I'm sure he did a great job. So great. Awesome. thanks for listening to this episode of First 100 Days. Original music by Dan Chmielinski, and feel free to tell your friends. Bye, y'all.